I'll be talking about what's new in SPAC version 1.0, which was released last year, and also what's to come in the next release, which is actually version 1.2, because 1.1 was released also in the meantime. Before I start with that, I'll do a short introduction. It will be slightly different than usual, and the main points about what's new will be like a repository split, some news about a new installer, and compilers as dependencies. My name is Harmen Stoppels. I'm based in Zurich and work as an independent software developer, and am involved for about like 6 years already with SPAC. You can find me online usually with this avatar, Santa's little helper. So I want to talk a little bit about what's unique about SPAC, but in the context of Nix and Geeks, because we've seen they are very well represented at this conference. And instead of going for the usual, like SPAC is this flexible package manager and you can mix and match versions, I would want to talk a little bit like how it relates to Nix and Geeks. So for those who do not know, Nix, Geeks, and SPAC, they're all based on the doctoral thesis of Ilko Dolstra. And he concludes basically two things in this thesis, that one, the best way to describe a software installation is the hash of all its built instructions. And second, the best way, or the best language for that is something purely functional. It is actually on purpose. So in this group of package managers, Nix and Geeks, they pride themselves as purely functional package managers, and they boast high ideals like purity and reproducibility, and that's great, like, don't take me wrong. And that seems to suggest by extension that SPAC being not a being written in this mundane language Python must be a non-functional package manager, and that is admittedly sometimes true. But I would like to make a point to the contrary in this talk, saying that also SPAC can lay claims to higher ideals, and it gets a bit philosophical. So I thought I would stay in the realm of this philosophical discussion, and to make my point, talk a little bit about package ontology and philosophical realism, namely Plato's allegory of the cave. So for those who probably everybody recalls from high school, that in this cave you have a group of captives sitting with their back to a fire in which objects are passing, and they cast shadows on the walls. Now, in Speck's contribution to the lexicon of philosophy, those objects are called abstract specs. So for example, you can think of this as the command line where CP2K depends on CUDA at 13 is passing by. The concretizer, it casts a shadow of this installation request and casts it in great detail. The shadows are called concretizations, and they're basically dependency graphs where everything is resolved, the package, the versions, the variants, the edges between the nodes, and it would, for example, be CP2K at a specific version, built with GCC, whatever, with a very specific version of CUDA, etc. So these shadows can be installed and run, but ultimately they're a projection. So if you're in the cave as a captive and you kind of bump the versions of those shadow objects, like in other words, you're curating a particular software stack over time, you're kind of playing with shadows. SPAC package maintainers, however, they transcend from this cave and they work in the world of ideals. So the package recipes they work on are not like a specific piece of software, but they describe how the software could exist in any possible reality. So they're like the platonic ideals of that software. So it captures the essence, and instead of saying like, I depend on CUDA 13.0.2, you say, I depend on CUDA. All right. Now, to get to the point, so what's unique about spec is that if you consider like a temporal axis, that unlike Nix and Geeks, spec is not mutating but additive. Like the entity SciPy, for example, kind of exists beyond time, whereas in Nix and Geeks, it's a mutating concept over time. So in spec, new versions are added and old ones can be kept. And by doing this, we keep multiple crowds happy. So on the one hand, there are like the conservative people who want to install old versions of software. On the other hand, there are people who want the bleeding edge or like a rolling release, or software developers who want to try out the newest versions of their dependencies. And we can keep these folks happy at the same commit of our package repository. And also, we have things like variants, which allow us to avoid community wars over like what are the proper defaults for a certain package, how to build it. So ultimately, we keep various, like in this world of ideals, we keep maintainers with different interests working together, so that back in those caves, users can cast the shadows they like. So speaking of package repositories, so what we've done in spec version 1.0, this is already a little bit old news, is that we split spec the tool from spec the packages. I think also Nix has done this a long time ago, and this was highly requested because, first of all, it allows you to bump the package repository to newest without pulling in the latest bugs that we have developed in spec, and otherwise, sometimes you want a new feature but keep your packages at a certain commit. So you can now do this in spec. And that was, of course, a nice PR to put up, removing 500,000 lines from spec the tool. The glue layer between this is the package API, which we promised to keep stable. And the package API is basically just like the Python first line of a package that says from spec.package import all. That API is versioned, and we hope to not deal with version bumps. Hopefully at all, but and the API is kind of set in stone, so if you find something that regresses, you should hold us accountable. The second thing that is a bit ongoing, so it did not make it to the 1.0 release directly, but it's a new experimental installer, and I will talk a little bit about the GNU job server, or the POSIX job server, and how we use that. So best to show what it looks like. So if you run spec install something, you will first of all notice that now multiple packages are building in parallel, as you can see on the right hand side. And there can be many in parallel in principle. There's just one flag to control the parallelism, and that's kind of like make-j if you're used to make. And we want to have package parallelism by default to make it a bit easier. There's a basic terminal user interface, and you can toggle between like the overview of what's building and the logs of a particular package. And we hope that in end of spring, we will have this as a proper default. A little bit about the POSIX job server. I guess it's, I don't know how well known this is, but it's an ancient protocol, so from a previous century. And it allows composable parallelism across processes. So it's been long supported in GCC, but recently there seems to have been like a renaissance of this protocol. Like last year, somehow everybody got interested in it again. And I think it was the motivator was mostly Ninja. So somebody had created a PR for Ninja job server support 9 years ago. And last year, the time was ripe to merge it. It caused like 3 forks of Ninja, the build system, or the build tool. I cannot go into all details, but there's a very interesting blog that kind of shows like what it took for maintainers to deal with these types of community requests. Like, why can't you have a job server? But it was very useful for Ninja because sometimes Ninja calls Ninja and it would cause a very high load on the system if there was no job server support. Much faster, it went in LVM. It went from issue to implementation within a couple months. It's not released yet, but And the spec had like the first implementation also in November. I think Gen 2 had a blog about it, and the Julia community was considering it in the issue. So what is it? It's basically simplest way to think about it is like you have a server that has a pouch of coins, and that's actually a pipe. And anytime you take a coin, it means you read a byte from a pipe. You claim that like I'm doing now something in parallel. And if you do this properly, you create like this process tree where if you start with n minus 1 bytes in the pipe or tokens in the pouch, and everybody takes one token for every parallel job, then the leaf nodes are, there are just n leaf nodes, assuming that they do are like sequentially executing or like using one single thread, one single processor, then you get it's like a estimate for the load on the system. The interior nodes in that graph are idle, and they make they're like truly idle. So people criticize this protocol. It's super simple, but like one bad apple, that argument. Suppose that somebody takes a coin from the pouch and decides like I will never return this. I keep it. Ultimately, the job server has no clue who took that coin, and you continue your build with limited parallelism. So it will just slow down the build. Well, first of all, I don't think that's very, it doesn't really happen. We don't see it happen in practice, and I think the Gen 2 people have also been doing lots of builds with these, and they're still using it, so I don't think that's a really common thing to happen. Otherwise, usually the build just stops anyhow with a build failure, for example. But if you really are scared of implementing a client for the job server, then you can also just use Mink, because it has both a server and a client. And that's actually what GCC does. So their link time optimization executable actually generates a make file at runtime and then calls make on it. I don't know if that's great, but it works. You don't get like you get a composable parallelism that way. Spec used to promote this before the new installer for power users that you could generate a giant make file for your dependency graph that you're about to install, and then run make on it, and make is basically like the driver that starts the job server, and you would get parallel installations like that. In practice, it was not great, and that's why we have a new installer. For example, sometimes you don't need to install all your dependencies, but just part of the dependency graph, and then this graph is not as static as you think it is. And there was also a lot of overhead of running make to run spec to install a package. It was a very short install. There was just too much startup and shutdown overhead of Python. Other people claim that this protocol is not modern enough, and by modern I mean 2008 when the Gold Linker first introduced like a thread pool in linking. So for example, if you have let's say a thread pool with many short-lived tasks, then like reading from a pipe and writing to it, that would be a lot, that would just be pure latency. So people thought it was not possible to combine this ancient protocol with modern parallelism. But LVM seems to have pulled it off, so let's have a quick look at how they do it. And funnily enough, it's being discussed as we speak, so maybe this slide is already not current as I speak. But basically what they implemented in the first iteration is they create a thread pool. It does, for example, linking jobs or short-lived tasks. And they start all the threads, and then they block all but one on acquiring a token from the job server. And only when they get the token, it can start doing a parallel work. It's not yet completely finished, I would say. So I hope it works in the next LVM release, but we'll see. There are some open issues. And actually, the Gen 2 people were on that, and I started also commenting on it, so I'm now getting updates about it. I hope that the next LVM release has a proper implementation. Last thing, or maybe second to last thing I want to talk about is compilers as dependencies, which landed in spec version 1.0. So I think this was kind of like the catalyst or the point at which you said, like, probably now it's time to make a 1.0 release of spec if we have this. And I think it was actually introduced at, or first alluded to by Todd Gamblin at Fosdam in 2018, so it's like very, very long ago. In spec0.x, we used to have compilers as attributes on a node. So for example, you would install OpenSSL 3, and then a compiler would be just like some property on that node. And that was a simplification of the real world. Now we do it like this. OpenSSL is a node. The compiler is also a node. And we even add a couple other nodes that are kind of necessary to make the model work, namely the runtime libraries as separate nodes in the dependency graph. So this is what you now typically see if you do spec install something. And I've colored a couple in green and the other one in gray. So the compiler is now a build dependency. And in principle, you can also uninstall it, and your software would still continue to work, which wasn't the case in the past with spec. So how does it work? In spec, we have now a better concept of languages as entities. Languages like C, CXX, and Fortran is what we have right now. They're kind of like virtual packages. And the compiler packages, they are providers of these virtuals. So for example, a compiler could provide Fortran, and the package depends on Fortran, and then our solver links these two together. It can be all conditional. So for example, you can have like an incomplete installation of GCC without a Fortran compiler, then it just provides C and CXX. The compilers, as packages, they can inject further dependencies into their parent. And that's how we deal with GCC runtime, like libstandard CXX, etc., and glibc as dependencies in the graph. We have some special logic that you can, like these runtimes are a bit special, like you can mix different glibc versions and GCC runtime versions in the graph, and that allows us to do like compiler mixing. And we try to be nice to deal with, like sometimes there's like a breaking chains in the API of gfortran, like libgfortran, and we try to ensure that you don't accidentally get like half a stack compiled with old GCC and the other half with new, and there would be API issues there. So we try to avoid that in the solver. We added some new syntax, and I think this is something that is probably unique to spec as a package manager right now, that you can properly talk about mixed tool chains. So for example, you could use Clang for C and C++, and GCC for Fortran, which was like maybe less so now, but it used to be a quite popular combination of compilers, and we can actually model this. So on the command line, you can actually say like, I want to install this package, and then the percent means depends on, and then it goes like language equals compiler, or it is actually more generic, it is virtual equals package. You can use the syntax everywhere, so we can now, we also have finer granularity when you know like this package, here you cannot use a C++ compiler from GCC. You can specify a conflict like this to add that constraint. And we added some, like you can specify in config what your compiler toolchain is, where you can say like you can shorten this a little bit. So you can, for example, talk about install things with Clang with gfortran as a dependency. I think I still have 1 minute. So another thing that we're concerned about, or actually users are concerned about, is that spec was pretty slow. So spec is probably different in the sense that there is a resolver that is doing what otherwise would be done by a community pushing like this ecosystem forward. So the solver was kind of slow, and also the fact that we used Python did not make it much faster. I think I won't list go over all of these, but there are like various like targeted PRs in the last 2 months to make spec as a command line tool a bit more, bit easier to use and faster to respond. And I think, so most of it comes down like trying to make the dimensionality of the problem we're solving smaller, so that the search is shallower, or and we're trying to reduce allocations and that kind of stuff. And we use some new tools that are in Python 3.15 that are actually quite nice that I can recommend. For example, the new sampling profiler is actually quite nice to figure it, figure out where your bottlenecks are. And I think I'll end with this slide that like over time you can see that there are some, like this is the package repository where we solve the our largest set of packages with our solver. And every now and then we bump the spec version there, and then you see like this drop, and we hope to get a few more drops so that spec install does not feel like it's stuck for a minute. I'll end there, and I'm taking questions from the audience. Yeah, 3.15 is not released. Oh, the question isn't 3.15, Python 3.15 not released yet? And that's true, but you can already use it. In fact, you could probably spec install it too. So the question is about compiler bootstrapping, that people would spec install GCC and then mark GCC installed by spec as an external or like as a configured compiler. So I didn't touch on this, but this is irrelevant in spec 1.0, because if you install a compiler, then next time you install something with spec, spec realizes that, hey, this GCC package is available in my store, so I can reuse that. So with compilers being ordinary packages, they should not be very different from, like, if I first install CMake and then install the package that uses CMake, the solver would also realize, hey, I can reuse this installed CMake. So the question is, can you use spec without like any links to the operating system? I would say we do, like, until the level of the libc library. So that's, I think, different from like Nix and Geeks. Spec ultimately still has this dependency on the system version of usually glibc, but otherwise that's like the only required external package. Yes.
Spec was zero version based for a decade or so, maybe not a decade, close. And you have spec 1.0 since last summer, essentially. Have you seen any impact on that, on how development is done? That people need to be more careful to keep that API stable? Because you were used to having, let's say, the freedom to break things. And now that you're 1.0, you mentioned that you want to be sure that things are stable. Does it have a significant impact in terms of how things are done?
So the question is, with the 1.0 release, are there any concerns about, like, are we limiting ourselves with or
is there impact on how development
is done? Is there impact on development how it's done now that there is a 1.0 release? I was actually a bit scared about this, so notably with defining a package API, and I think we did it pretty quickly. So we split the repo, and then, okay, now we'll see. Like, maybe we forgot about all kinds of stuff that we want to change in spec, and that's now no longer possible. In practice, I would say we did not really see this. So our day-to-day development on the tool side is not really impacted. Sometimes you have to look up, like, am I touching public API here? But in practice, we still met. Like, for example, I was worried, like, we cannot do performance improvements, but we can. And actually, we just started with that in 1.0 because we felt like, okay, now we have something stable. We can do more targeted performance improvements, for example. So it feels like we're still quite flexible.